Michelle Lee worked for over 3 decades as an award-winning journalist in Minnesota's Congressional District 8. She lives in
Moose Lake,
and she's a DFLer running for Congress. Michelle Lee joins us in the studio now. Thanks for being with us.
Bonjour, and thank you for having me.
What led you to run for this seat?
Oh, wow. My background. Well, let's see. I was born and raised in the 8th Congressional District. I've spent much of my life here. I have been married for 37 years to a wonderful guy, and we live in Moose Lake. We have a son and a beautiful daughter-in-law who live in Duluth. And I worked in television, also worked in radio. In fact, I got my start out of Brown Institute of Broadcasting, which was a VOTEC school. Learned the basics, and I was lucky enough to be hired here in Grand Rapids, and I worked at Kix 96 FM on your dial, and we did commercials, we did news, and I did the police beat, the cop shop, all of that stuff, and learned my trade. I spent nearly 35 years on television in Duluth covering the stories here in the 8th Congressional District. People ask me why. I retired at the end of 2016. I was going to just relax, do some flower gardening, and travel with my husband. You know, the typical things people do in retirement. But then I started seeing what was happening close up, basically to the generations coming up behind us. And my husband and I, we've had a good life. We managed to work hard. We have managed to put a little away in retirement and, as I said, a good life. But I see, and the fear is that this next generation and the generations to follow won't have that opportunity because of rules, regulations, the way this country is going. And I can't stand for that. And I won't stand for that. And I decided to make my voice count and to stand up and speak truth to power. And if the voters choose, I will go to Washington and continue to tell the stories of the 8th District to let people know that the struggle is real and that there are solutions, and together we can find them.
So what is your take on why this seat is so watched and is so much money pouring in nationally, and what makes this so important?
Well, I think you put your finger on it. It is extremely important. And I believe that we all got a wake-up call on election night 2016 when Donald Trump became our president or was nominated to become our president. People thought we can no longer sit home. Democracy is a wild, crazy, beautiful, messy thing, but it takes each of us to get involved to make sure it works. Some people did stay home on that election. Others decided not to vote for the candidate of their choice as a protest vote, whatever. Now things are real. We're seeing the results of that inaction back in 2016. People are getting angry. They're getting recharged. They want to make a difference, and they are going to turn out in this primary. There's a lot at stake. On the DFL side, the Democratic side, we believe we can build our own wall. You know, our president talks about building a bigger, more beautiful wall on our southern border. We can build our own wall. It's going to be a blue wall, and it's going to be in the U.S. House. It's going to serve as a check against a Republican president who is stacking the U.S. Supreme Court and the House and Senate. We build it. It's our first wall, and it's in the U.S. House.
So let's talk about some of the priorities. You have them listed on your website. Let's talk a little bit about higher education, your thoughts on that.
Well, I'll tell you what. We have a generation now that is too big to fail. Back in 2008, when the banks were failing and industry was struggling, we came out as a nation, came together and said, Wall Street, all of these big businesses are too big to fail. Our banks are too big to fail. We came together as a nation and said, for the protection of our economy and the future, we have to stand up and we have to make some tough decisions. We did. As a result of that, a lot of young people coming out of colleges and VOTECs and trade schools came out, and there were no jobs because the economy was shrinking, the job numbers were climbing up, the unemployment rate was going up, and a lot of these young people coming out of college with $50,000 to $100,000 in student debt were taking minimum wage jobs. They couldn't find jobs in their chosen professions. Those young people, 10 years later, are still struggling to catch up economically. They're still struggling with those high interest rate student loans. And as a result, they're not buying homes, they're not getting married, they're not having babies. This is a generation frozen in time. And folks, this is a generation too big to fail. It's time for us to stand up and come together and say, we have to bail this generation out. Number one, I believe that tuition should be free at our public institutions, our public colleges, public universities, and our VOTECs and trade schools. As baby boomers are retiring, we're seeing a lot of jobs opening up, but we're not seeing enough people to fill those jobs. So higher education is essential. We're going to have to replace doctors, nurses, white collar, but we also have to replace the people in the trades who are retiring now. And we have to start flipping the switch on the message we're sending to our young people about going into the trades. I know I was guilty of it as a parent. When my son was in high school, I said, you got to get that 4-year degree and we'll figure out how to pay for it later. But there's a lot of young people who don't want to go into a 4-year program, they just don't want to be a doctor, a nurse, a lawyer, what have you. They want to work with their hands. But parents have not given them permission. But the thing is, traveling around this district, I see a lot of now hiring, help wanted signs. They're in the trades. We were up in International Falls recently, and I talked to a woman who owns a trucking company up there, and she said, we can't find truck drivers. We pay a good wage. We pay good benefits. We can guarantee the workers be home on weekends. We just can't get people to fill these jobs, whether it's welding, whether it's electricians, whether it's plumbers. I'll tell you what, we're going to need all of those white-collar jobs. We're also going to need those trade jobs and those skills to make sure that the infrastructure is brought up to snuff and that this country can hum and move forward together.
If you win this seat, you represent the people of District 8, and that includes the Anishinaabe people who live on the 5 sovereign nations within this district. What do you think are the biggest areas of concern for those folks?
Protecting their sovereignty and obviously their environment, but also there's an opioid epidemic that's not only crushing throughout all communities, it's really hitting the Native American bands extremely hard. And that breaks my heart. It breaks my heart when I see anybody struggling, right? When I see grandmothers raising grandchildren because a whole generation has been lost to the struggles of drugs. And so what, number one, we have to really get serious. We have to create beds. We have to come up with treatment programs. And we have to do a stronger push on education. And we have to go after those big pharma and the drug companies who are, what do I want to say? Are they guilty? That's up to the court of public opinion. But they have added to this problem of opioids and the prescribing of opioids and the pushing of opioids. And those drugs do get into the hands or get onto the street. And then we have people who are addicted. And then we have the deaths, the overdoses, and the children in foster homes and all of those things. So, number one, we really have to come together as a nation to solve that problem. And as far as sovereignty and native rights and power, they need a place at the table, especially when it comes to our environment. Because what I see in Washington under this current administration, with a stroke of a pen, they can roll back environmental safety things put into effect to protect our air and our water. Ultimately, it could end up going back to those sovereignty rights and having the Native Americans being our wall against efforts to turn back our environmental laws, rules, and regulations, because they will have strength when all of the environmental regulations have been rolled back. So we need to form, we need to become their ally. We need to reach across the table and say, we will help you do whatever you need to do. We can work together to protect our air and our water.
So I want to give you a moment to discuss for a really complex topic, which, of course, is copper nickel mining.
Well, first off, during this campaign, I've been called a tree hugger, a leftist, some names that I wouldn't even be able to say on radio. And that's okay. I've grown a very thick skin. Sure, if being an environmentalist means I really care about the water quality and the people downstream and protecting this beautiful country that we live in, I guess I am an environmentalist. I care deeply about every child being able to wake up in the morning and breathe deeply clean air and have that fresh, clean glass of water and go out and enjoy nature. Sure, I'm an environmentalist, but I'm also a realist. I know we need jobs, and I support iron ore and taconite production. We all know what that's done for this Iron Range region. It has built the region, communities have depended on those paychecks, families have flourished and continue to flourish, although the numbers of jobs have dropped significantly over the years as a result of mechanization and modernization. I will do everything possible as a congresswoman, as the first congresswoman in Minnesota's 8th Congressional District, to help shore up and serve as an ally to the iron ore industry in any way possible that a congressional representative can do. That said, I cannot support the current proposals that are being offered for the mining of copper and nickel here in the Northland, also known as copper-nickel sulfide mining, depending on which side you are on this issue. Because we know, if you look at the science and you look at what's happened worldwide, copper-nickel mining has never been done anywhere in a water-rich environment without harming the environment. And it could be a very long struggle to clean up the mess if the worst should happen. And I know a lot of people will say, well, we have rules and regulations in place and we'll be very careful. And if there is a problem, by golly, we have the technology to clean it up. We have the smarts to do that. Why are we sitting here talking about creating a new problem where the solutions aren't there yet to solve that problem should the worst happen? That scares me. Besides the environmental issue, we also have to talk about the boom and bust economy that we're all familiar with. If you've lived here in this region for any length of time, we know that mining is a boom and bust. It's all tied to the value of the minerals on the world market. When the price drops, plants close down, people are laid off, and every time we have a bust, these small towns who depend on this industry start getting smaller and smaller and smaller as people lose or leave to find jobs elsewhere. When the boom occurs, those same people or as many people do not come back. So it's a shrinking economy. What we have to do is come up with long-term economic development, good-paying, sustainable jobs that will work in tandem with our current mining to make sure that we don't only survive, but we thrive here in the Northland. And people say, well, what are we going to do? How are we going to do that? Number one, we need to expand broadband and high-speed internet throughout the rural regions of the 8th District and throughout this country. Our grandparents, your great-grandparents, lived through the Rural Electrification Act back in the 1930s. That brought a light bulb into the barn so the farmer could get up at 5 in the morning to milk cows. It might just have been one little light bulb in a barn, but it changed the face of rural America. We can do the same with a Rural Broadband Act that, if everyone comes together, we can make sure that every square corner of this nation is connected with the world. And imagine what that would do. That would bring young people booming back to these small communities to create businesses, online businesses, sell their products online, whether it's farm to table, whether it's that farmer raising honeybees. They can let people know that the honey's ready. Sounds small, but I'll tell you what, all those little small businesses, the backbone of the American economy. And they need to be lifted up.
That's DFL candidate Michelle Lee. She is running for the District 8 congressional seat. You can find more information at michellelee.org. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.